Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness, Pujya Swami Chidananda Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. We all come across times when our belief in God is always strong, but our faith dwindles. How can we develop complete faith that removes fear of the unknown? Well, if belief in God is strong, then faith should stay strong. The question said, belief in God stays strong, but faith dwindles. In order for that to happen, what it means is, I believe in God, but I just don't necessarily think that God's always making the right decisions. If my belief in God is strong, but my faith is dwindling, it means I'm not enjoying, I'm not feeling good in things that are happening. Therefore, it's hard to have faith. And that reminds me of a story that I share frequently of a teacher I had when I was getting my PhD in psychology. And she was a beautiful, beautiful professor, and I remember her very vividly and very lovingly, who, in all of her free time when she wasn't teaching, she was working with children who were dying of AIDS. And she was a devout Christian. Her husband was a chaplain in the hospital. And someone once asked her, how do you do this? How do you, on the one hand, stay devout in your religion, stay devout in your faith of God and a divine plan, and every day watch young children die, suffer and die due to nothing that they did wrong, innocent young children? How do you balance that? And she said something really beautiful. She said, I never doubt God's presence. I never doubt the presence of a divine plan. She said, but I do find myself sometimes wondering whether there couldn't be a better plan. And what I love about that is the awareness that yes, God is there. Yes, there is a divine plan. And yes, because our vision isn't complete, it certainly seems to us at times, with the amount of the full tapestry we're able to see, that maybe there could be a better plan, that if someone had only asked me, I could have advised much better and we could have had a better plan. Young children wouldn't suffer and die. There wouldn't be wars. There wouldn't be this violence. There'd be a better distribution of everything ranging from wealth to water. But what that's rooted in, and of course she knew this and she said it, you know, jokingly, but it's rooted in only being able to see a piece of the tapestry. And it's rooted in a belief that which we value, whether it's success, whether it's wealth, whether it's health, whether it's peace, whether it's happiness, is somehow also the divine plan. That somehow God's highest plan is success and wealth and health, because, right, you shake your head, of course not. But yet, in our minds, what happens is we've got faith until the stock market crashes and we lose our money. A loved one gets sick and perishes. We get sick. We're given a terminal diagnosis. An earthquake flattens our house. We see a news show or a documentary that rips our heart out of the suffering of people on the planet. These are the sorts of things that shake our faith. Even though we know God is there, it's what shakes our faith. And the root of that shaking faith is things should be different. The earthquake should not have leveled my house. The stock market should not have crashed. I was such a good person. My loved one should not have gotten sick and die. I should not be sick. We're good people. I've done good things. As though somehow loss, whether it's of money, whether it's of possessions, whether it's of your health, whether it's of a loved one, is somehow a punishment. And therefore, if you don't deserve the punishment, there's no justice. If you've been handed out a punishment that you didn't deserve, well then where's this kind and loving God? But the flaw lies in our reasoning. None of that which happens is a reward or a punishment. God's highest plan in kindness and love and compassion and benevolence and all of that is not that we should all be rich and successful or necessarily live a really long time. I mean, if it happens, great. But the highest, most benevolent, compassionate plan is that we should awaken to the divinity within ourselves. And so that which happens in our lives happens so that we can take that next step. There's a beautiful moment in the epic of the Mahabharata where after the war, the Mahabharata, of course, is the epic in the midst of which the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. And then there's the war. And despite Lord Krishna being there, despite God being there, of course, there's death. It's a war in order to restore Dharma. There had to be a lot of death. And at the end of the war, Lord Krishna says to Kunti, he says, the mother of the Pandavas, he says, you've been so, so devoted, so dharmic, so pious, so pure, so divine. Ask any boon of me. This war's been horrendous. You've suffered so much. Nonetheless, despite losing so much, suffering so much, you've been just the epitome of grace. Ask anything. I'll give you any boon. And this is Lord Krishna speaking. It's God speaking. So she said, I want that in all of my lives, in all of my births, I should always suffer a little. And he said, what? Why do you want to suffer? I've just told you to ask any boon. I'm God standing before you, offering you anything. Why do you want to suffer? Why are you asking me for this boon? This isn't a boon, this is a bane. Why are you asking for this? And she says, because what I have found is that when things are going very well, when everything's great, I sometimes can forget you and drift away in my mind far from you. But when I'm suffering, I'm very close to you. You're very near to me. I'm always remembering you. And since I know that remembering you and being close to you is the highest ultimate goal, then grant me the suffering. And so it's not that suffering is the goal any more than not suffering is the goal. The goal is to awaken. The goal is to connect with God. And so all of that which happens is ultimately for us to take the next step in our awakening. Most of it, of course, is due to our karma, due to things that have happened. But I also believe that it works not only retrospectively, but that it also works in terms of moving into the future. So it's not just a matter of that which is happening today is due to that which happened in the past, but also sometimes I think that which happens today is to create, allow, permit that which needs to happen in the future. And so, for example, the incredible widespread suffering that's happening today. In my personal belief, I don't think it's all due to the karmic debts of all of those to whom it's happening. I believe that on some level, and I couldn't tell you exactly how it's happening, but it's just a deep belief that I have, is that there's also a lot of individual souls. Of course, we always talk about how it's really one soul, but the individual waves of that ocean, the individual consciousnesses that have made a decision in some way to utilize this life in order to catalyze an awakening on the planet. And that it's not just a matter of all of these people somehow deserved to suffer and die in this way, but that through their suffering and dying today, so many people on the planet are waking up. That there's a wave of consciousness that is rising on the planet. And so I actually believe that it works in both ways, that which is happening is due to that which we've done, but also that which is happening may be due to that which needs to be done in the future. And that there are individual souls, consciousnesses who have made this choice on some level, in some way, to be in service of a greater awakening. And so our faith should not be shattered when things like that happen. And we should always, always understand that there's a bigger picture. And if we just could see the whole tapestry, it would make sense. And that's the faith to hold on to.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM-FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. The real purpose of life is to connect with the divine. Doesn't matter what name we use, doesn't matter what form, doesn't matter what religion, it doesn't matter what culture, it doesn't matter what language we use. But to connect to that, which is eternal, to connect to that which is content and essence rather than form. Most of us spend our lives connected to form. This body, that body, this house, this car, these clothes. And the real purpose of life is actually to connect to that which is eternal, which is the soul, which is the divine, which is the essence, which is the spirit. Just different words for talking about the same thing. It's what the body is not. The body is in a constant state of change. I mean, forget the fact that we've only got it for a certain number of decades. But even within the decades that we're alive, it's constantly changing. Constantly. The cells of our body are in a constant state of renewal and regeneration. And so connecting to the form is actually keeping us away from that which is true. So the real purpose of life is to connect with the divine. When we talk about God realization or self-realization, that's what this is. It's not an intellectual realization. It's not the, oh, I realized that drip, drip, drip was my faucet that was on. Or, oh, I realized that what I was allergic to was the strawberries in my cereal. Not that type of an intellectual, there was a problem plaguing me, allergic breakouts, leaky faucet, whatever it is. And of course, on the deep level, sad life, disconnected life. But we don't solve it intellectually. You can solve your leaky faucet by figuring out what the problem is. You can solve an allergy by figuring out what you're allergic to. You can solve a math problem. You can solve accounts. But when we talk about realization of the self or realization of God, it's not an intellectual realization. It's not the, oh, that's how you do long division realization. Or, oh, that's how this works realization. It's an experiential realization. It's a realization of the heart, but not the heart that just lives here, of the heart in every cell of us. So every piece of us awakens with that light. It's literally an experience that we have, not of the mind, but not separate from the mind. Every bit of us suddenly starts to pulsate with wakefulness, with light, with love. And it's as though every aspect of us is saying, ah, ah, ah. But it doesn't matter, again, what it is that we've connected to. Whether we say Christ, whether we say Krishna, whether we say Allah, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if there's no name. Doesn't matter if it comes through meditation on a mantra, if it comes through chanting, if it comes through your hands in the dirt planting trees, if it comes through whatever. What matters is that we have that experience, because otherwise we go through life connected just to form. And the form is so transitory. And the whole purpose of us being here is not to connect to something that one minute is here and the next minute isn't. It's to connect. We use the body. The body is the medium for us to have an awakening. If we didn't have a body, if we didn't have a brain, if we didn't have neural networks and connections that enabled us to sit still long enough to meditate, that enabled us to have that realization, we wouldn't awaken. So the gift of a human birth is not, oh great, now I can, you know, be more powerful than all of my competitors. Now I can be number one. Now I can be the best. It's not about that. The gift of a human birth is the consciousness that we have, the ability to think about ourselves, to step out of that which is living and acting, into what is called the witness that's able to see it. So we're able to see ourselves. And when we're able to see ourselves, we understand, well, if I'm watching that, I can't be that. If I'm able to access a witness of myself that watches myself get jealous, that watches myself get angry, that watches myself get frustrated, that watches my ego raise its head. Well, if I'm able to connect with the witness, then two things happen. Number one, I don't get swept up by that. And number two, it gives me an awareness, well, I guess I'm not my anger. I guess I'm not my ego. I guess I'm not my jealousy. Because look, here I've just connected with a part of myself that's watching it. So if I'm the one watching myself get jealous, if I'm the one watching myself get angry, if I'm the one watching my ego go out of control, then I can't be the jealousy, I can't be the anger, I can't be the ego. And so it gives us that experience of, oh wait, there's more in here than I thought. There's more going on here than I thought. And through that connection in the witness, it takes us to a place beyond even the witness, where we're able to be connected with the one who's watching us connect with the witness. Connect with the one who's able to say, who's able to know, oh yeah, now we got this witness thing. And we just keep getting deeper and deeper. So it's not a rejection of the body. The body is beautiful. The body has been created by God. It's magical. I mean, imagine we dump all this junk into it. When you dump in French fries and you get blood cells, you dump in a candy bar, you get blood cells, you get energy. We get the stuff that runs our brain. Okay, not very well if all you're living on is French fries and candy bars, but nonetheless, I mean, it's magic what the body can do. What happens in our digestive system? What happens if you're female in our reproductive systems? I mean, just the body is incredible. So spirituality is not about a rejection of that. But it's about not identifying as that. I'm able to be in awe of it. I'm able to use it. But it's not me. And that's the point of our life, is to connect with who am I really? And when I have that awareness, then everything I do is just in service of that truth. And that's, of course, when we stop accruing karma. That's when we attain what's referred to as liberation or moksha. We still have a body. We're still in the body. We're still breathing and digesting and respirating, and our endocrine systems and circulatory systems are still functioning. But we're free. Because we're not a slave to the body. Like, I mean, I'm able to use this microphone, but not be a slave to it. There's no way in which this microphone is hindering me, because I don't identify as it. I would never think I am this microphone. So the spiritual path is not about, you know, take the mic and trash it just because it's not me. No, it's a great tool. It's wonderful. Because of it, my voice is able to go to the back of the room. Even with the fans and the AC going, you can hear me. But it's not me. And that's the same with the body. And so that's what we're put here for, is to have that awareness. And then through that awareness, and I'll talk about this tonight when we talk about Buddha. When he's had that enlightenment, then what happens? Because then, of course, what he did was serve. Because then we really are able to be just a tool. And to use every bit of our body, to use every breath, to use every moment in serving.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip or the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. Why do sad, negative feelings stay with me so much longer than the happy and positive ones? When I feel happy and blissful, I wish I could just bottle it. But somehow it seems very short-lived. And it is taken over by feelings of sadness, frustration, and anger. This is very common. And the reason for that is if you look at the cause of the feelings of happiness and bliss and the cause of the frustration and sadness. So our causes, in most cases, of our happiness and bliss is something that we get from outside. We were studying for an exam. We take the exam. We do really well. We're very happy. We were looking forward to a party. We go to the party. We really enjoy it. We're very happy. We have something nice to eat that we like, whether it's a cookie, whether it's pizza, whether it's mom's special food, whatever it is. We think about it. We love it. Finally, we get it. We enjoy. But all of these things don't last very long. A meal is over in 20 minutes, half an hour if we really linger. A party's a couple of hours. The exuberance we feel after doing well on an exam or doing well at something at work is inevitably short-lived because right after that, we have to start learning things for our next exam. They don't let you ride very long on one exam in school. One exam is over and then it's okay. Now learn the stuff for the next exam. Same at work. You do something really well. You do a project that was great. You feel wonderful. But then it's business as usual. Back to the work. And so the things that give us that happiness and that give us that bliss, because we're getting it from things outside, it's not going to last. And then why does the frustration and sadness last so long? Well, because again, what we've told ourselves is, until and unless I get that which makes me happy, I'm not happy. So until I have another one of mom's great meals, or until I get another of those pizzas or another of those cookies, or until I'm sure that I'm going to do well on my next exam as well, we're anxious, maybe we're frustrated, we're worried. The other thing that happens is, when happiness comes, as the questioner said, I wish I could bottle it. Now that's something we all feel. You have this beautiful moment, maybe a deep moment even. Maybe not even just a superficial, you know, food or exam or party moment, but a deep moment of bliss. And the first thing that comes to our mind is, oh my God, how can I hold on to this? Oh my God, this is going to go away. We fall in love, and the first thing we think is, oh my God, what if something happens to them? We have a child, great joy, but that joy is tempered so much by fear. Oh my God, what if they get run over by a car? They're going in the street. What if they eat this? What if they get sick? Why are they crying? So even bliss and joy that's deeper, it doesn't last, because what it does is, in our efforts to hold on to it, and our efforts to make sure it doesn't go anywhere, we've brought in fear into the joy. And for those of us with overactive intellects and imaginations, you can actually get yourself in your mind already into the place where the loved one is sick or dead, where the child has been run over by the car, where something horrible has happened. And so here you are in this moment in which everything is perfect. Everything is there, but we're not even able to enjoy the real joy of the moment for very long, because our anxiety kicks in, our fear kicks in, our longing to hold on to it kicks in. And the truth is, nothing lasts forever. Everything has a cycle. You know, we talk so frequently about the waves of the ocean, and they go up and they go down. And if my happiness is connected to the going up wave on the ocean, then the minute that that wave goes down, I'm going to no longer be happy. And this is where the key is not, how can I bottle my happiness? The key is not, how can I make sure this doesn't end? Because, of course, in thinking that, I've already ended it. In trying to figure out how to bottle it up, in trying to figure out how to make sure that nothing happens to it, I've brought in the fear. I've brought in that sense of dissatisfaction. See, I have it now. But it's not enough. I need to have it tomorrow also. I need to have it next year also. And what that does is it brings an element of lack into a moment that is otherwise very full and a moment that is otherwise very, very blissful. What I've done is I've shifted my perspective from abundance to lack. And that's what removes the joy. The more I realize that this moment is not enough, I've got to make sure that it's still with me tomorrow, that it's still with me next week, that it's still with me next month, that it's still with me next year. Well, I've shifted the entire perspective from a feeling of, oh, everything is perfect, to a feeling of, it's not yet enough. Maybe if I have it also tomorrow, also next week, also next month, also next year, also forever, maybe if this thing never leaves me, maybe then it'll be enough. And what that reminds us on a very deep level is, it's never enough. There's always lack. And that, of course, brings us into depression and frustration and sadness. And so, in the moments of joy, live them fully. And I'll tell you a hint, a secret from science. Spirituality has been telling us for thousands of years, live in the moment, live in the moment, live in the moment, be present, be present, be present, be here now. But here's what neurology has taught that I find really interesting. If you actually want to hold on to a feeling, if the joy in this moment is so powerful that you want to make sure it's with you next week or next month, actually, you have a way to do it. And the way to do it is to be so present here in this moment that it actually creates a pattern in the brain. This is why everybody knows where they were when something traumatic happened. So we all know where we were on 9/11. My mom's generation could tell you where they were when John F. Kennedy was shot. Whatever the tragic shocks that have taken place in our generation, everybody knows exactly where they were standing, exactly what the world looked like around them on what was otherwise a very ordinary day. In your life, if you've had any sort of traumatic experience, something bad that's happened, inevitably you can remember every aspect of that day. If you had an accident, if a loved one has passed away, we remember the details like they were in front of us, even if it happened years ago. We remember in the morning we woke up and we had oatmeal for breakfast, and then he asked for a second cup of coffee, and I walked into the kitchen and I was still in my bathrobe and I was making the second cup of coffee, and just I put one sugar cube into it and I turned around and saw that he had had a heart attack, right? We remember that level of detail. Why? Because on a neurological level, when something very, very meaningful, very, very profound happens, everything surrounding it gets cemented into our consciousness. Cemented in. It's there forever. And so if you're in the midst of a moment of peace and joy and bliss, make sure that your mind is so present there. Make sure that you're fully 200% there and your mind isn't wandering someplace else. Cement that moment in your mind. What does it smell like? What does it look like? What does it sound like? So you're in a moment of joy. Well, all right, what can you hear? What can you smell? What do you see around you? Use your senses and literally cement that moment in. And it's actually neurologically the very best way to keep it with you. But on the emotional level, the minute that we recognize that the only joy that actually lasts is the joy that comes from within, not the joy that comes from the food or that comes from the party or that comes from anything else. The minute we recognize that is the source of joy, then we start focusing on that. Then rather than trying to bottle up the rest, we focus on finding a source that's endless. And that's always there.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. How do you grapple with this yearning for inner peace and the practice of inner peace and the privilege to even be able to think about inner peace with that which is going on in the world and wars and sex trafficking and, of course, hunger and crime, I mean, everything that's going on. We recognize that in order to be really effective in the world, and I say this slightly harshly because I've been through it personally. And I'll share at the end a personal story about that. But in order to be really effective, we actually have to be in peace. Otherwise, what ends up happening is I bring my own ego and my own baggage and my own junk into even something that looks on the surface like humanitarianism, that looks like service of the poor. And yeah, sure, somebody who's hungry is going to benefit from a sandwich I make them, whether I'm clear with my stuff or not clear with my stuff, whether I'm still suffering from an ego or I'm not suffering from an ego. The sandwich is going to help him anyway. But if we want to be of bigger use, use that requires actually connecting with an intelligence to how can this be solved, Not at this moment, just how many sandwiches can I quickly make? But why is it, for example, that we actually produce enough grain in the world to feed 10 billion people when we've only got 7 billion on the planet and tens of thousands of kids are dying of starvation every day? So the ultimate solution to that is not just how many sandwiches I can make. It's how much of a part of a bigger solution can I be? Until then, yes, by all means, let's make as many sandwiches as we can. But ultimately, the goal is, how can I be part of a bigger solution? How can I be part of peace? How can I be part of all of this? I mean, whatever aspect of that which is going on in the world that troubles you the most, because of course there's so many, and sadly we only have a few hours each day. So we can't all really sadly commit ourselves to everything. So you pick and you choose, and it's the environment now, or it's hunger now, or it's sex trafficking now, or it's war now, or whatever. And there's nothing more important or less important. It's just about what abilities we have, skills we have, connections we have, opportunities we have. But in all of these cases, if I want to really be able to be of some kind of effectiveness, bigger than just how many sandwiches can I make, I'm only going to be able to do it if I can actually be clear. Because the solutions are not actually obvious. Sounds obvious. Well, we've got all this grain. I mean, why not just ship it to the people who are hungry? Sounds really simple to me. But if it sounds that simple to me, clearly other people have thought about it. There's impediments to it. Yeah, I mean, those of us outside of the Middle East can certainly look at a map and say, well, for God's sakes, why don't they just draw a border here or draw a border there or say, all right, you take half, we'll take half. Why not this? Why not that? But the closer you get into it, the more you find out about the intricacies of the problem. And this is true everywhere, wherever you look. And what that means is, not that we should be daunted at all, but that we recognize the importance of connecting to a higher source of intelligence, a higher source of inspiration, out of which real creativity and real innovation and real inspiration comes. Otherwise, we're able to be just robots. Otherwise, we're able to do only that which our, you know, somebody before us in this job role did. But if we really want to do something big, we've got to be connected to a source of creativity, of initiative, of innovation, of intuition. And that comes only when I'm able to create space. If you look at the geniuses in history, including even scientific ones like Albert Einstein, where you'd think, well, God, he must have just done it with a lot of paper and a lot of pencils. But actually, his greatest discoveries, from what he shared, came when he was not at his desk with his paper and his pencils. It wasn't that staring at the paper the awareness came. It was going out to take a walk. Because in the space is where something new flows. And so we recognize that our inner peace is not the end in and of itself. It's not about just let me be in peace and yeah, you can suffer and go to hell. You know, that must be your karma and I'm just gonna work out my karma and be at peace and be joyful and, you know, hope you do better next life. You know, it's not that. It's let me be in peace so that I can actually be a vehicle of service. Otherwise, walk into any NGO, any nonprofit organization, even those doing the most fantastic work, spend a few days in there, and what you'll realize is how much better work they actually could do if there weren't so much infighting. How much better work they could actually do if the people who worked for them were able to focus on the work they were doing rather than on who was saying what to the boss about them or who got the corner office or who got the best sandwich, you know, whatever. And this is really where the spiritual part is so important. There's a lot of NGOs. If you look at the sheer number of people who are working to theoretically make the world a peaceful place, to theoretically make the world a sustainable place, to theoretically feed people. This should be done long ago. I mean, it's not rocket science. Distribution of grain for 10 billion people is not rocket science. What's required is people who are able to connect with a source of inspiration and creativity outside of themselves. Because there is an intelligence in the universe. If you look at nature, there's an intelligence. Whether it's in caterpillars becoming butterflies, whether it's in seeds sprouting and becoming trees, whether it's in the fact that no dog ever jumps off a roof after a bird thinking that he too could fly. I mean, just that nature knows what it's doing. And I have a deep, deep belief that we would all be much better agents of service if we were in deeper peace. Whether what you're doing is stuffing envelopes or making sandwiches or being the one to create a new company. Because in that, what we need are people who can think, who can feel, who understand, and who therefore can be creative and innovative. And not just punch the time clock at one NGO or another. I mean, they mean well. Everybody means well, of course. They chose to work at an NGO instead of at, you know, a corporation. But what you find is that so much of the time and the energy ends up getting stuck. And so when we do our inner work, it's not just so that I can be in peace even though the world is suffering. It's so that I can be in peace and therefore can be a tool to help the suffering world. I'm very well aware that the inner peace is a means to an end rather than the end in and of itself. But it's an important means to the end. Because every year we've got more and more NGOs and more people working for them, and yet the problems aren't dissipating. So what we need are people connected to spirit. People working truly for others rather than for themselves. So this is why our inner peace is important, because only when I'm at peace am I able to recognize that peace over there, regardless of who brokers it, regardless of whose name is on it, is more important than me winning a prize for being the broker of it. But if it's all about me winning that prize, then now I've become an obstacle to that peace process. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.